kind of ending the journey to Lent today, which is kind of fun. It is definitely a wilderness outside. And we meet Jesus on this little side trip that he takes when he sails into Gentile territory, into the area of the Gerasenes. If this had been written at a time where, like, television had existed, I almost see this as being presented like a crossover episode. Because Jesus, he's traveling out of his normal area, and it's not his normal people, and it just seems to be this very unusual side trip that he takes, and I just hear the 1970s announcer going, "This week on The Gentiles, Jesus guest stars." I mean, it has that feeling, I read it, I was just like, it really does, just, it's so different. It doesn't mean it's not important, it just is not along the normal range of his ministry. The Gerasenes is an interesting place. It actually doesn't refer to a place. It refers to a people. The Gerasenes, and I confess I had to look this up. They were people who lived around the town or the city of Gadara. That's why another place they're called the Gadarenes in one of the other Gospels. And it's the southeast banks of the Sea of Galilee or Lake Tiberias or whatever the Romans were calling it that week. And it is right across from Galilee. Jesus, for whatever reason, he decides he's going to sail over there and see what's going on over in Gentileville. And so he doesn't even get off the beach. I mean, he's getting out of the boat and this wild guy shows up who, thankfully, I didn't do it accurately, because the guy that shows up didn't have any clothes on. He hadn't worn them for years. And this wild man comes screaming out of nowhere. Now, I don't know about you, but if I had been among Jesus' disciples at the time and saw that guy coming out of nowhere yelling at me, and I was already a little uncertain as to why I'm going over into this Gentile territory in the first place, I'd be like, well, this is nice, Jesus, let's get back in the boats. This place is a little bit much. Let's turn around, because who knows? When you see someone like that, you don't know what's going to happen. You're back a little bit. Who knows what's going to go on? But interestingly enough, this guy's he doesn't have any negative desires towards Jesus and his companions. In fact, he comes and he recognizes Jesus' authority. He bows down at his feet and he starts pleading with me, don't throw me, don't torture me, don't throw me into the abyss. Luke's kind of interesting because we call this man the demoniac, right? Because he's obviously out of his right mind. There's a demonic possession that's going on here. And Luke is very quick to point out that he has a backstory. This guy, and this is kind of funny, the whole choir left and I just have Amanda and Pam sitting over here, which is kind of fun. So I just see I just saw somebody move their hand over. It's like, she's intelligent. That's good. I don't know what Amanda's doing, but that's okay. So, all right, let's keep going. So this guy's got a backstory. I mean, people have cared about him. He's not just some loner that's off, and he's, you know, that doesn't have any connections. He's been constantly brought back into town, and he's been put in restraints for his own safety, because obviously he seems to be a danger to himself. Somebody cares about this man, and that makes his repeated breaking out of his restraints and going off into the wilderness, and he's living in the tombs with the dead bodies. I mean, you can't get much more unclean than where this gentleman happens to be living. Even the Gentiles would have had a little bit of, like, why are you living out with the dead people, right? This is a sad story this man goes through. And so Luke gives us just that little taste of his backstory. And so Jesus asks the man's name, and he gets the response back, Legion. And it's really kind of fascinating. A lot of people, you'll hear people oftentimes say, like, well, this is because he asked for the name, because this is how you gain power over something. And there's no indication that that's what's going on in the text. In fact, that's a magic mindset, which is definitely not a Jewish one. I really think that Jesus asks a man's name because he just wants to confirm this is a demonic issue that's going on here. And he gets back confirmation, Legion. And Luke points out this is because so many demonic forces had come in to this man. And it pleads again, don't send me into the abyss, right? And amazingly enough, Jesus shows mercy. You got that herd of pigs, it's over on a hillside. And they said, just send us over into pigs. And Jesus says, okay, go ahead. Which is, it's kind of, you're thinking, you know, unclean spirits, unclean animals, perfect match, right? There you go. And so the spirits go, whoop, they leave the man. They literally went, whoop. And they went into the, you know, they go, this is an interesting day. They go into the pigs, and the pigs immediately, they lose their collective mind. Same thing that happens to the man. And they rush down the hill, and they all drown in the Sea of Galilee. This is one of those moments where you're going, why, what on earth is happening here? Why would Jesus allow this to happen? And Luke doesn't explain it. He does it. You're just kind of like, well, this happened. Like, great. Why? And we're left kind of with speculation. One of the things that I think is that what Jesus is doing here when he gives mercy to the demonic forces or the demonic spirits, he gives them both mercy and enough rope by which to destroy themselves, which is exactly what happens, right? They take the grasp, the mercy, and they take the rope, and they end up destroying themselves. That's the madness of evil at work. Evil does not know what to do with mercy, with compassion, with grace. It sees it as weakness. We'll take advantage of it. And this is how evil sows its own seeds of destruction. I think that's kind of what's going on here. And interestingly enough, the whole pig thing is kind of like a side note to what's actually happening in the story. The immediate impact of what happens is the man is suddenly in control of his own faculties for the first time in who knows how many years. He thinks clearly. We find out a little bit later that he puts on clothes, and he begins to have a conversation with the human being as a person for the first time in who knows how long. But there's a secondary impact that goes on here too, and that's that the neighborhood becomes really freaked out. The shepherds who see all this stuff, I looked for something that was freaked out and it popped up and flickered. Don't ask me. The shepherds who see this, they're like their livelihood just ran into the water and drowned. They're going, uh-oh. And so they run back to town. They tell everybody what happens. And the town all comes out to see what on earth is going on. And what greets them terrifies them. Because they see this man who they recognize as the person that they restrained, that is dangerous, that keeps breaking out. And he's in his right mind, and he's sitting at the feet of Jesus having a conversation. He's in the place of a disciple. This man quickly, I'm going to follow this master who healed me. Other witnesses show up. Because, you know, why would you trust the swineherds, right? They show me, this is exactly what happened. This guy, Jesus, showed up out of nowhere off the boat. The guy screams. The next thing I know, the pigs are running out of the water. And what happens? The townsfolk all say, can you go away now, please? Now, we, like a modern thing, we think, well, that's dumb. Why would they, obviously he healed this guy. Why on earth would they want him to go away? Well, you think about it. Jesus' first act of healing had quite a large price tag. And they're probably thinking, good grief, if he decides to heal somebody else, what else is it going to cost us? And so they're freaked out. Jesus, thank you. Go away now. And what's he do? He gets up and he leaves. He departs. The man who was healed, that former demoniac, he begs Jesus, let me come with you. You healed me, you saved me, let me come with you. And what does Jesus say to him? You're going to stay behind. Why? He's going to become a witness. He has to tell everybody what God did for him. And this is exactly what he does. He goes around, and it's an interesting switch that happens there. Jesus says, go and tell everything what God did for you. And then Luke says the next thing. The man went around and he told everything that Jesus did for him. Luke is kind of pointing out here, like, these are the same, right? So that's kind of a big deal. And that's what he does. He goes and he tells everybody. So even in this region where people encountered the power of God and it freaked them out and they said, can you go away now, please? God leaves a witness of the great salvation that is coming. I think that's pretty fantastic. So what's all this got to do with us? Well, as I was pondering this week, and I'm looking at all the people who make up the story, the person that I think we are most closely akin to in this entire passage is actually the demoniac. We stand in his sandals. All of us, each one of us, at some point in our lives, God has done something for. It might have been something relatively small, like God just gave me a good family and let me, you know, grow up in amongst folks who love me and care for me and help me grow, which really, when you think about it, isn't that small, although we have the audacity to think that's ordinary. Or it could be something really big. God saved me from a substance abuse or an abusive relationship or from my own selfishness and made me a compassionate person. All these things, right? So God's done something for us in our past history. And really, we want to stick with that Jesus who does the great cool things. And this is why when you look out at the Christian landscape, what people want to do, they want to go to the big conferences and they want to go to the big concerts and they want to be at the melodramatic churches that has all the big programs because it just looks like God's always doing something there. And we're not there. It seems sometimes to us that God's looked at us and said, no, you have to stay here. You have to stay behind. Now, this is our perspective, right? God, Jesus is always with us, but in our perspective, the great things have moved on. Other regions of the world, other areas of Christian faith and practice, and we just seem to be kind of standing around. But Jesus didn't leave us here because he was abandoning us. He was leaving us here because he needs a witness. See, here we remain. And you think about it, we live in a region where religious devotion is rated significantly lower than, children's cheerleading and soccer and midget football and just slightly above clipping your toenails. And you look around, it's like, what on earth? God's not doing anything here. And yet, the power of God has been seen here. And unlike in the Gerasenes, among the Gerasenes, people aren't freaked out about it so much as they just see the power of God and go, that's boring. And yet the truth is that Jesus cares for this place and the people who live here really and truly and deeply. And the reason why I know that is because he has left a witness here. And that happens to be us. Us and all the other churches in this area who continue to proclaim that wonderful love, power, and grace. The question for us is, are we going to find ways to go out with that message? They're not coming here, right? They're at soccer practice. They're at wrestling practice. They're at football. They're at cheerleading. They're at band. How do we meet people there? Since we've been called to be witnesses there. Or we're going to sit around here. And we're going to wait for Jesus to come back and do something amazing again. We're that demoniac. We've been healed. We have a message. How are we actually going to share it? Amen.